This week on RSVMB Update, Maud Blackwich joins us for another Behind the Crown, where we talk about RuneScape environment art, what challenges working on RuneScape poses, and why all the trees can't be updated. We also check in with the upcoming changes to Fresh Start Worlds. This is RSVMB Update, episode 897, recorded Thursday, August 25th, 2022. The Fresh RuneScape Environment. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of RSBNB Update. Just Tanis, myself here for right now. Welcome back, Tanis.
Thank you, Shane.
This week we had quite the reception last week with the Fresh Start Worlds episode. Lots of comments and whatnot about how people wanted to hear our opinions. People agreeing with us on the rewards. People agreeing with us in general on the take on it, and you know a few things around the edges about how the community was perceiving it. So thanks everybody for the wonderful comments on last week's episode. We were wondering what we were going to be talking about this week, but we got it. An addendum to the Fresh Start Worlds segment, and the thing that everybody's going to want to listen to this episode for more than the comment on Fresh Start Worlds probably is that later in the episode, Maud Blackwich will be joining us for an installment of Behind the Crown. Maud Blackwich is an environment artist at Jagex, worked on a lot of the environments like Archaeology, City of Centistin, Aya, and most recently, the Wilderness rework, amongst other things. So we had a fun sit down with Maud Blackwich this week, so that'll be coming to you later in the podcast. But I am Shane12088 in game. You can find Tanis at Tanis79, and you can find full show notes for this episode, including the Behind the Crown, at update.show. All right, how are you feeling about Fresh Start Worlds this week?
You know, I'm feeling even more optimistic than I was before. And, you know, and there were a few things I was on the fence about, but mostly I was looking forward to it. I was definitely, you know, planned on doing it. Now I've kind of moved beyond planning on doing it to like, can't wait to do it. I'm really looking forward to it. You know, over the last week, I've thought about it a lot, and I've spent a lot of time thinking about it. I'm like, you know, the minor concerns that I had aren't really that big of a deal. And they kind of started to fade away. So it was very kind of ironic to see this addendum come out, because I think there are some great, changes. And then I think there are some things that, you know, given some time and given people, you know, looking at it from, you know, from a level-headed kind of point of view, I think the community could have came around. That being said, you know, nothing big or major, and we'll talk about all that, you know, coming forward. But I'm so looking forward to it. I mean, I never get mad about a delay, because it usually only makes content better. But I wish we were starting on the 12th, because
yeah,
I'm excited. Like, I'm like, you know, I was already thinking about some friends that I had. You know, one friend in particular that I got to try RuneScape earlier this year, and it was too much. It was too overwhelming for them in the beginning, and I thought this would be a great time to see if they would give it a go again, because we'd both be starting at, you know, for fresh accounts. And it would be easier for me to kind of walk through with him. So I don't know. I mean, I'm looking more forward to it than I was last week.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat as well. And I was pretty much decided before our episode last week that I was going to do it. Same with you now. I'm definitely looking forward to jumping in and getting on board with that. I haven't started the theory crafting yet about the best way to go about doing what I want to do for that one, but I think the thing that still gets me is what Sirion said, is that this is going to be the best way. He said this last week, and it's in one of our nibbles. This is going to be the best way to bring new players to the game and make new friends, because everybody's going to be, hopefully, I emphasize hopefully there, wanting to help out with ensuring people get on board properly. And, you know, hey, you need a few salmon here to level your cooking level. You need some wood for your fletching here. Let's do this and you can pay me back later, kind of thing. And this is something that will be happening in Fresh Start Worlds, and it's just bringing back that community aspect of it. And I think one of the big things that comes from this is that there needs to be somebody out there with one of the very traditional, and I'm going to emphasize this, in one of the very traditional gaming platforms outside the RuneScape community. And I'll emphasize that outside the RuneScape community, because the RuneScape community, as we've seen in the last week and a half, is very insular in terms of how it thinks and what it wants, specifically for RS3, right? So,
I mean, and anyone can be guilty of that, right? Like,
yeah.
Even myself, I realized with what you just pointed out, that was the one thing that I underestimated more than anything, because I look at this game from a point of view of a high level player, right? I didn't even think about until earlier this week, where I was like, oh, I'm going to try to get my buddy to play this. We'll both be starting out. You know, like, that was the part that I really underestimated. Like, yeah, it's always great to have a high level friend, you know, being able to play, but to have that knowledge and start on the same level, even better. And I totally underestimated that. And I mean, that's something that we, you know, that I don't do very often. I don't believe I try to take a very, you know, holistic approach to things, but even I underestimated, I think, the impact that that's going to have.
Yeah, definitely. And one of the things that I'd really like to see happen with this, and we'll get into the changes in just a minute here. I'd like to see somebody from outside the RuneScape community. They could be from old school, or they could be somebody from a different game that's very successful in their content creation and had maybe played RuneScape, you know, 10 years ago or so, or even before that, come back and give it a go and put their spin on it. Because I think that's a problem we have in the RS3 community, is that everybody, in effect, what's wound up happening, I feel, through this, is that there's a dominant view on what Fresh Start Worlds is going to bring, but at the same time, what this is going to really allow to shine with RS3 isn't bubbling its way up to the surface where it needs to. So that would be my hope from this.
I mean, not only are we insular, but circular fire and squad a lot of times.
Yeah. So the first change is that it's delayed until the 26th.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, we're bummed about, but at the same time, we're very much always been on record that if you can delay something and create a better product with it, that's good. Like the archaeology example, right?
Yep, and there's several examples like that. So that's, like I said, you know, I'm never mad about a delay. It only usually makes content better. I can be bummed, you know, because I wish it was starting earlier, but I totally understand, and it's worth it to get quality content, right? Like, it's only 2 weeks, so, you know, it's not going to be too bad.
No. The next big change is that membership will be available through bonds through a new passcode system. So what they say with this is that they're developing a way to allow RuneScape bonds to be redeemed for 14-day membership, which will be given via passcode, which I assume you then enter in-game or on a website, and they want to have this ready for launch on September 26th. So the idea behind this is that existing players will be able to use their bonds to get membership on a Fresh Start Worlds account.
I just love it. I love it, love it, love it, love it, love it. This was one thing that we pointed out that would be a great change. This was something that could make it better, because it's going to allow people that might have been on the fence or might not have really wanted to interact because they saw that membership as a barrier, be able to do what they normally do if they are people that purchase their membership through in-game, you know, GP. This is just good. I've looked for a downside. I cannot find one.
Yeah.
Like, I think this is really, really good.
And they say as the Fresh Start World game mode was built on a permanent, fully-fledged RuneScape account, there was no way to share an existing membership with the Fresh Start World characters, just like the situation you're in if you make an altar in Iron Man. And with this, they wanted to see if there was a way for current active players to have a path to Fresh Start World membership through gameplay, just as they do with the existing membership in the main game, which, of course, can be done by trading bonds to your alt. So, they call this an out-of-the-box technical solution, and they have found a way to... they're able to confirm that it does indeed work.
Awesome.
So there's that.
I'm really excited about this, too, because I think this is going to get some people to try it that... wouldn't have, because the membership was too much of a barrier.
You think?
I do. Because a lot of people, I mean, it's not that hard to pick up a bond within game. You know, I think this is going to get a few that wouldn't have done it because they didn't want to pay.
Bonds are hovering 55 to 58 mil right now.
And any time you have another use for a bond, that's only a good thing. Keeps that market healthy.
Yeah, so you need 4 bonds if you wanted to pay through the entire competitive period, because each bond is 2 weeks.
Right.
So you're looking like 230 mil, give or take, once you factor in all the taxes and such. So, I mean,
think about it. Your main's just it's going to be doing alt work while you're playing Fresh Start World. It's no big deal.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And you know, PVMers are going to have the money to do that.
Oh, PVMers will slap it down right now. I mean.
Right. You know. And then if you take it further, then you're at another 230 mil to take it through the other 8 weeks on that. So, I mean, less than 500 mil to pay for the entire thing. I mean, I could do that if I wanted to right now.
And what if you have like a friend that's super rich? They don't want to do Fresh Start Worlds by themselves. Hey, you want to play this with me? I got you. I'll get your bonds.
Yeah.
I mean, I think this is a great change.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Next up, talk about game integrity. They are rebalancing the week-to-week XP multipliers and reducing the peak multipliers. And to figure out what exactly this is in terms of the numbers, we don't know what it's going to peak at. So that's important to say. But it's going to start at 1.5x. That's what it starts at. So you can imagine that it'll go up, you know, to 2x fairly quickly after that. And the accounts or the levels under 70 will still have the extra boost on top of that. So you're still going to be getting a pretty darn good XP rate on that.
Yeah.
How do you feel about the XP rate changes?
So, two things. One, I think at first it was an emotional response from myself that felt like maybe this is just a little bit too much. But the more I thought about it, and the more I thought about our discussion that we had, you know, we had a great discussion last week, the more I thought, you know, it's really not that big of a deal. And then with Jagex repeating that we think that this is okay, you know, we think this is okay, we've ran the numbers, I really started kind of trusting that, you know, more. And then with some things that have gone on just in, you know, IRL this week, I'm going, yeah, I shouldn't be that upset. Like, this is actually a good thing. Because I think it's going to make it funner. It's one of the things I'm looking forward to playing about it, right? So I think I want to see what this ends up looking like. Hopefully it's not too toned down, because I think that will kind of take away some of the fun in it. I just think we needed a little bit of time to get past that emotional response that even I was guilty of having.
Yeah, and I spoke to Sirion about this earlier today, he said that the XP rates didn't seem like they were too extreme, and he felt nerfing them was actually unnecessary. And Taxi's in the same position that you are on this. So, I just want to make sure that our panel is not being insular on this as well. But we need to just underscore again that the whole point of this is to play through and, you know, try and get as many levels as you can in that 8-week period and then continue on a little bit more casually in the second 8 weeks after that. So,
yeah, I'm kind of in the
camp that the XP rate should have stayed.
I'm in that camp now too. And see, I don't think you can be insular when you actually start off with a slightly different perspective and you spend time really thinking about it, really digging in and going, well, okay. You know, and then on top of that, Jagex has the numbers that we don't, and they have the data that we don't.
Yep.
So, yep. You know, over time, I feel like that's growth. You know, that's a way to, like, I don't know. I don't look at it as a fault to change your position if you're changing your position in the right way. Like you've thought about it. You've really, you know, internalizing what was talked about. I mean, isn't that the point of debate? I mean, that's the point, right?
Like, right.
So, you know, and I'll be the first to admit, like, yeah, I think what it was for me was it didn't feel good right away, right? Like, it felt like, oh, someone's gonna get something that I didn't get. And when you really think about it, that's not fair. It was an emotional response from me.
You just pointed out something that is going to lead to a huge amount of personal growth for anybody who realizes that. You know what that is? Is that anytime fair comes in to the question, the word fair being used, you're talking about an emotional response because everybody's definition of fair is different.
Yeah.
So... they also removed the boons of experience, which provided an extra level for any skill under 99 that you could have wanted to use them for.
Yeah, I mean,
like, that's not the biggest deal. I mean, maybe if you just wanted to get to overload a little bit quicker, or maybe if you wanted to stack them to finish a 99, maybe that might have been good. And you know, I thought that the boons of experience were one of the more interesting elements of that they had, because everything else was, you know, something we might have seen before in game in one incarnation of another, but we've never actually had anything to permanently increase levels like this, so I'm kind of disappointed this one's gone.
And see, for me, this one just isn't that big of a deal because it's one level. It might be able to
stack them.
But how many, I mean,
I think it's like 5 if I remember correctly.
Okay, so, but even then, 5 levels, you know what, you could go from 94 to 99. More importantly, and probably more likely, you're going to use it to get to those really important milestones, like what you're talking about, like overload or something like that. But it just doesn't seem that big of a deal if you're grinding. And we have the experience multipliers anyway. Like, to me, this was like total icing on the cake that I don't even know how I would have used it.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, that's fair. They also removed the boon of skill pets, which provided a plus 100% chance for skill pet drops. Okay. I mean, it's fine.
Yeah. I mean, the thing for that with me was like, if you were going to trade them because you wanted a halo on your main, you had to have the pet anyway. So it really just made it like easier, you know, cooler to get that pet. And otherwise, like, I don't think, it may be the people coming back, this is going to be their main. But for the rest of us, our Fresh Start World account isn't, I mean, it's not going to be our main. So this could have stayed, but I don't think it's a big impact taking it away either.
Yeah. They're also reviewing the weekly effects, and we'll keep the players updated if any changes are to be made on that. And when it comes down to, and this is what you were saying about gameplay data, based on the extensive gameplay data available, we are confident that our original XP and boon balancing was well-tuned for how the vast majority will play. See?
And which, that kind of reassures me that I don't think there's going to be a lot of changes with that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't think there's going
to
be a lot of
changes. They're also certain that the mode can't be used to create disproportionate amounts of resources in the main game, which makes sense. And they say, since this is an experiment for all of us, and part of that is properly considering your feedback as existing scapers, based on those concerns, we've toned down some areas where we can feel this can be changed without compromising the appeal of the mode for most returning players.
And it's good to show that, I mean, it is good to show a receptiveness to constructive criticism. Well, I don't know how constructive it was, but criticism anyway.
Oh, yeah. I mean, CM and whoever else was working on this, all the devs involved in it, they were waiting through a swamp or something this entire week and a half.
And this seems to be, I mean, we'll see where it ends up, but this seems to be like they've struck a decent balance between standing your ground and being receptive to on some things, right? Like, you know, the pet chance, that's not that big of a deal. The boon of experience, to me, that's not that big of a deal. It's bones you can throw. It's some red meat you can throw to your base, but you can still do what you want to do. You're still trying the experiment. You're just kind of throwing the base some red meat, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what I think want to summarize this whole thing with. We have to talk about the bonds still. But that's effectively what's happening here. There's very little changes in this document. And I don't know if there's anybody who was dead set on not playing it who is going to change their mind now. I don't know if there's anybody out there who hasn't, and I'm going to use this term in the lightest sense possible, I don't know that there's anybody out there who hasn't been brainwashed who was already decided that they weren't going to play it. So
I think anybody that was on the fence about membership that wouldn't have wanted to pay.
Yeah. This isn't going to move them. If they have
in-game money, this will move them. Or okay. If they have a friend that has a lot of money that doesn't care.
So
about
you think if the people have in-game money, it'll move them?
I do.
Okay. And I'm just wondering how many people out there are still just going to say, you know, I have no use for this. I'm not going to play it because these things weren't taken care of, or there's something else wrong, or this isn't leagues, yada yada yada, right? I bet there's going to be those people out there who feel that way too, which is unfortunate.
I mean, I'm sure, but I mean, how much more excited have you been when you started thinking about like going from the beginning and doing it with your friends again?
Yeah.
And having the excitement of like double XP getting, I don't know. I've only gotten more and more excited about it. I think if people sit and start thinking about it, they're going to want to do this. And once you start hearing the buzz and people really are enjoying it and they're on Discord and they're talking about it, you're going to want to get in that.
Right.
I think there might be a little FOMO going on, you know, after the first week, right?
Right. Like, and that's why I'm wondering, is there anybody in the old school community or anybody in the wider gaming community that's not necessarily already an RS3 player that Jagex has lined up that we don't know about to play this thing and make some noise about it, right?
Wouldn't that be cool? I mean, Ninja comes out and starts playing RS3. Or,
there you go.
It would be, you know, someone like that, you know, be crazy.
Right. And I think that would be the ultimate goal of this thing. And I think that would send a message to the RS3 community that, hey, this is happening and we might be on the path of figuring out a new and updated existence for RS3. So
what it can do is it can take us, and we're all guilty of it, right, at one time or another, but it takes us out of our own heads. It would take RS3 players out of their heads and show them that other games do different things like this to get people to play and to come back, and yeah. doesn't actually end up hurting the game.
Hell, you know, yeah, I mean,
you just got to get out of your head.
Like the Star Trek Online recruitment events,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, that's a perfect example. When you brought that up last week, I was like, that's a really good example. Yeah.
Bonds. This is another change. Each account will only be able to buy or sell one bond per week during the first 8 weeks during the competitive period. One bond per week.
And that's pretty much all you need for the membership stuff, right? Yeah. Like, well, I mean, so...
Because totally one bond buy. Gets you 14 days of membership.
Yeah.
And there's no treasure hunter during the first one. And, I mean, hey, I mean, unless you want to change your name, then that might be something. But come on. Eight weeks, pick a name.
This is totally... Yeah, I already picked my name.
Okay. I haven't.
It's great. Okay. Yeah, it's going to be Tannis with FSW in front of it. Okay. Boom, there we go. We're done.
And they said, we also heard your concerns about potential pay-to-win scenarios that could emerge from players selling bonds in the race for world's first, and it's important that the competition itself be as fair as possible. So to make sure that both perspectives are balanced, they decided to limit accounts to one bond purchase or sale per week. Purchase yeah. or sale per week.
And I think that's going to be perfectly fair. I mean, how much money are you going to get if you think you sell it anyway? I mean, you're going to be losing quite a bit if you were to try to sell a bond in Fresh Start Worlds versus the main game.
And we don't know how much they're going to sell for on day one because, you know, the economy isn't going to exist.
It can't. I was going to say, it can't sell for that much.
Right.
Like, that's the thing. So, is it really worth $8 real-world cash for just... I just don't think so. And not to mention that, but even if you had money, okay, so what? What are you going to do with it? There's only so much things out there you're going to be able to buy.
Yeah.
So it really doesn't matter.
Yeah, 100% agree on that. And there's also an entire expansive FAQ document for this as well. People can go through. That's where I got the XP numbers, just an FYI. Questions about Iron Man, XP boosts, competitive and accomplishment phases, world first, so on and so forth. Treasure Hunter bombs, etc. as they go on. And I think this was needed to go through this FAQ document. We'll have it linked in the show notes at update.show. But overall, oh yeah, okay, good. The clan system question is there. Clans will exist, however, citadels will not.
Makes sense because of the skilling.
Okay. Exactly. So
yeah,
but I agree with you. I have got progressively more excited for this. I want it to come. I wanted it to come on the 12th, but we'll just wait until the. We'll wait until the 26th, and then we'll get going on what we're gonna do. I initially thought, you know, hey, maybe just some skilling, but then I thought, oh, maybe we'll go for the Questscape too, because questing has always been a thing for me. So we'll see. We'll see how it goes.
And I thought that, like, you know, because my goal is basically get as many skill capes as possible, right?
Right.
That's what. But then I was like, wait a minute, I'm gonna have to do some quests. Like, there's no way around it. Like, there's no way around. I'm going to have to do some quests. So I might be skilling through the week and maybe pick one day in the weekend where we're going to have to do some questing. But even that kind of is starting to sound fun again. You know? Thinking about, you know, Shield of Air off again. Thinking about... Dragon Slayer again. I'm kind of getting excited even for those things.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, this is going to be a fun opportunity for us as well, because we'll be keeping a notebook along. You know, where are the rough patches for people who haven't played an alt before? I'll tell you that the first 27 levels of Hunter are awful if you don't have hunting dummies to boost that with. So that's going to be a pain for everybody. Remember how bad Hunter was when that first came out? So there's going to be all sorts of these things that are coming up. And I think people who are just immediately shutting the door to this are not seeing what could be possible from this. And I mean, by all means, if you're happy with one account, then you don't need to play it. But I think there's lots of other interesting opportunities for this. But it all comes down to if you have the time and if you want to put a little bit more into an extra account. So I don't know that I have anything else left to say on the changes here. I think we went through what our panelists last week said and the document here and our thoughts on how they've evolved over the week, and then just in general a longing to get into this game mode. So,
yep, absolutely.
Yeah. All right, we're going to go do Behind the Crown, but before we do that, I have to thank some Patreon supporters, because you guys make what we do here possible, and you guys are voting right now in another landslide of a monthly bit bowl. I'll talk about that in a minute, but this week I'd like to thank Amos Reed, Andrew C., Arvids L., Big Huge Rant, Chunk the Monk, Diana, Dominic F., Drama Free, Dura Max, Hello Matey, Flaza Man, Free Milk, Jacob G., Jade Gizmo, Jason S., Jeebus, Jesse W., Ling01, Lucky Ducky, Mohan V., Nate the Great, Nick G., OTR Gamer, Patty the Architect, Pernasius, Renhawk, Ricky A., Samuel FL, Skiotan, Scott DS, Seth W., Stub Eve, Tabby, The Naked Captain, Tom V., and Zant. Thank you, everybody, for your support. It truly means the world to us, and Patreon members gain access to an entire back catalog of monthly bits that we record at the start of each month and they vote on. And they're voting on a number of choices right now. One of them is the skilling tier list of all things, which that's the one that's running away currently. It's got 100% of 10 or 11 votes, I think, at this point, as of recording. And it's going to be not your traditional tier list, folks. Not your traditional tier list that you find on YouTube. We're going to put the RSBNB update spin on it, just as we did with the daily tier list and then the PVM boss tier list. So that's going to be a fun one. The other choices were Music of the Elder God Wars. We're pulling that one last time. You guys don't seem to like that one, but that's okay. And Environmental Storytelling talks about how RuneScape started to tell stories as a text-based MUD using Xamarin Infos to what we have today with advanced graphics. So if any of these sound interesting to you, or if you want to listen to the entire back catalog of monthly bits, you can find those at patreon.com/rsbnb, starting for as little as $1 a month. And if you choose to support us, you help fund the cost of hosting and production of RSBNB Update, and you'll also get a special mention in our show notes. For $3 a month, you'll receive a special VIP rank on our Discord channel, including a special chat channel and a mention on the podcast at the start of the month, in addition to high-quality stereo versions of the show. And if you want to give the ultimate gift, we have the $5 RSBNB Update Insider tier, where you gain access to all the clips we use to make the clip show at the end of the year. And this includes clips from the pre- and post-show sometimes. And last week, we had a bumper crop of clips. I think we had like 6 of them from last week's episode.
Nice.
So everybody had a good deal of fun with last week's episode on that. So big thank you to our Patreon supporters for making what we do here possible. And we're probably going to start production early of that monthly bit, given how it's running away. I don't think the poll runs until Monday or Tuesday, but I don't think it's going to get overtaken at this point. So I might start production on that this weekend. We'll see on that. And we also have our roundtable this weekend, which is another Patreon-only feature. We gather in the RSBNB Discord and just chat about RuneScape. It's your chance to come and put your stamp on what you're doing on RS, put your stamp on the RSBNB community, and just have a general chat with the hosts and producers. And we record them for posterity's sake, of course, and also post them to the Patreon feed. So those are always fun to do So patreon.com/rsbnb if you want to support the podcast. Thanks so much, everybody, for making this possible.
Thanks, everyone.
And with that, let's go have a chat with Maude Blackwich to talk about what being an environment artist on the RuneScape team is like. This week, we have another installment of Behind the Crown, which is the series where we sit down with a JMod. We've had folks on like Maude Stew and Maude Shrike before. And what we do with the Behind the Crown segments is we spend about an hour or so with the JMod in question, ask them a few questions and get to know them and what they do at Jagex. And this month we're sitting down with Maude Blackwich. Welcome aboard.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Maude Blackwich is an environment artist on the RuneScape team and has helped build some of RuneScape's most iconic locales over the past few years. This includes hotspots like the Archaeology Campus, City of Sintistan, Aya, and most recently, the recently reworked Wilderness. So, Maude Blackwich, before we get into what an environment artist does, do you have anything you'd like to say before we jump into our quickfire round?
Not immediately. Let's go for it.
Alrighty. So, starting off, and this is our chance to get to know you, what's one fact about you, Maude Blackwich, the person that everybody should be aware of if they're not immediately aware of?
I'm going to go wedge. I'm from Belgium. I've seen so many people try and guess where my accent is from, and I've not seen anyone place it correctly. So English is my second language. First language is Dutch.
Okay.
And, moved to the UK for work.
Interesting. So. Yeah. And, you know, when it comes to the podcast and in general, the community surrounding RuneScape, there's so many accents, and you are 100% right. I was not able to pin where yours was from. So thanks for enlightening us on that.
It made me seem like German or things like that, but it's like, no.
Yeah. I was thinking that, you know, that might be a one of the top guesses, but we'll leave that to Maude Blackwich to answer at some point. So next one, what's your favorite beverage? Any, can be any kind.
A warm matcha latte.
Okay. Nice for chilly nights and I guess.
Yeah. It's just like incredibly comfortable.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That makes sense. That's a good choice. Favorite hobby?
It's a bit of a difficult one, I find, as an artist. I should probably have like different hobbies that I do a lot outside of making art, but the one thing that I always just keep coming back to is just painting and drawing. And it's slightly different than what I actually do for work, but we'll get into that later. But
yeah, sure.
I always just get back to painting and drawing people, interestingly enough.
Oh, okay.
I really dislike drawing environments.
Interesting.
which is quite a funny. I'm not entirely sure why, but yeah, just sitting down painting people is something I really enjoy.
All right, and kind of following that train, do you have a favorite book or movie?
At the moment, Crimson Peak.
Okay.
Because I really like gothic horror movies, and just the aesthetic in that movie is so incredibly beautiful. Like, the costumes and just, like, the sets and the environments in it are so good. But I keep watching that movie just for the visuals, almost.
All right, and I'm going to ask this, and maybe we'll come back to this later. Does that factor into any kind of inspiration at all when it comes to your artwork?
Sometimes. In general, most of the artwork that I tend to do in my free time, and even like a little bit on RuneScape, although it's changed a bit now, seems to be a bit more like colorful and cute almost.
Okay.
I guess not really on RuneScape at the moment, but like at least the projects that I do in my free time, I would class more as like nice and wholesome and less gothic horror.
Yeah, and I, you know, when you say that, I think everybody's got to have a space for that. So that's good.
Yeah.
And last one of the quickfire round, do you have a favorite quote?
I was thinking about this, and I keep coming back to just like one thing that my previous lead environment artist once told me, And it's very simple, but he once told me, just, you can't make good art if you don't feel good. And it just, that just like completely changed my perspective on working in the game industry as a whole. Like, before that, and just like any art I did, I always just like kept pressuring myself and forcing myself to do more and better. But now, since then, it's just more like putting myself first and just like any actual work after that.
Interesting.
So I feel like the one that's had the most profound impact on me, I think.
Yeah, and that's why we asked that quote question, to see what kind of impact it had. And I guess one quick follow-up from that, does this mean that in terms of most of the time then putting yourself first, does that mean that art is a therapeutic outlet?
Bit. It's just more like trying to get a work-life balance.
Okay.
The game industry in general is like very known for overtime and things like that, right?
Yeah.
So it's just like a rule that I set for myself. Like, I'm not going to do that. Luckily at Jagex, I can indeed do that.
Nice.
So yeah, it's just making sure that, yeah.
Making sure that you got the right work-life balance.
Yeah.
All right. And that pivots us nicely into talking about environment art and your background. So obviously we mentioned some of the areas that you've worked on in game, like Centistin, Aya, and most recently The Wilderness. So what exactly, if somebody is just coming to this for the first time, what exactly does an environment artist do?
So we basically make all of the 3D environments that you walk around in game. Basically everything besides the characters we've worked on. That's the terrain, that's the trees, the buildings, the sky, the lighting. All of that is the work of an environment artist.
All right. And I guess following from that, in terms of looking at RuneScape in particular, with that, there's obviously tons of environments. I just rattled off five or six of them when we were starting off here. How does that in particular work with RuneScape? What are some of the day-to-day responsibilities of a RuneScape environment artist when it comes to looking at those environments, the locales, the textures, the trees, etc.?
It really depends on where we are in a project. So basically, we take projects entirety from nothing, just from like the concepts, the first designs that were made. We will make like blockouts that are just very rough, literally made out of like white cubes and things like that, just to lay out the scale. The beginning of projects that will just take like weeks.
So it's kind of like a clay molding phase, then, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
Okay.
Pretty much.
And then.
Then after that, it is actually dressing these up, which can include making the individual assets, like statues, for example, or just the walls, doors, anything like that, all of the terrain materials. And then actually putting those in engine, actually putting them around. Then also doing the lighting.
Okay.
So it's some studios have like separate level design artists or separate lighting artists. Those are all different jobs. But for RuneScape, that kind of all comes on the environment team. Like level design is a bit of a collaboration with different disciplines. But lighting, for example, comes on us.
Okay.
And then after that, it is kind of like dressing up the environments and adding like little environmental storytelling into it.
Yeah, and I think we've started to definitely see that more in the last few years. I definitely felt it in the Wilderness rework, Aya, and the Centistin Asylum also comes to mind with that of just where the environment starts to tell the story behind that.
I absolutely love it in the Centistin Asylum, and especially as well in the Undercity for the Zamorak dungeon.
Yeah.
I absolutely love all the little details in there. Like, that was mainly done by another environment artist. So even for me as well, just, like, walking around in it, it's just like, oh, what are all the things that I can find in here? It's great.
Yeah, and it's almost like looking, and I know as a player for a long time at this point, for me, it's always comes down to going to one of these reimagined areas or one of the new areas like Centiston, or on the flip side, the archaeology campus, seeing just the day and night before after of that archaeology campus when that came out was absolutely shocking to me in terms of just all the attention to detail that you guys put into these things in RuneScape 3 now, which is that a new thing in terms of the level of detail going into these environments, or is that just something that technology advancements have provided along the way?
Yeah, I feel like it's a bit of both, probably. It's just like technological advancements, and then also just the artists on it being more experienced.
Okay.
And yeah, more paying attention to this. It helps a lot that we get to see as well that players really like it. So then we get positive feedback, so that just leads to us doing more and more of it.
All right.
But like some of the environment artists on the team, for example, have been working on RuneScape for like 15 years now. So over time, obviously, the people just get better and better at it.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. And I guess this pivots into your background then. What led you in particular to become an environment artist?
It was a little bit of trial and error. So I always love doing art. But as I said earlier, like I love drawing and painting people. So I kind of wanted to do something with that. And I also really enjoy playing video games. So I found out then that a university in Belgium, where I'm from, like taught video game courses. So I was like, oh, sweet, that sounds interesting. And the course that I did was actually very, very general. So we saw some concept art. I learned some programming. I learned how to make characters. So I kind of got to try out a bit of everything. And at first I thought I wanted to be a concept artist, but then I found out the hard way that that was definitely not for me. And then suddenly, at one point, we had a stylized environment art course. And I just really, really loved doing it. There's something so nice about being able to actually build an environment in 3D and being able to walk around in it and discovering it. That is so incredibly satisfying to me. So as soon as I learned how to do that, I just kept doing that. And yeah, I realized that I wanted to make stylized environments.
If you had, and this is a bit of an offshoot from this in terms of stylized environment, mm-hmm. not necessarily RuneScape related, what would you say if you had the resources, free time, and this is not RuneScape related, what environment would you like to create?
So this is going to sound completely different now because I said I want to make I want to be a stylized environment artist, which I am. So the one thing that I really want to make is an actual terrifying, realistic underwater horror game.
Oh,
which is very, very different, I know. But I just want to create like an eldritch horror, incredibly terrifying underwater game, because I haven't found one that exists yet, and I want to terrify people with it.
And underwater, that provides an entirely new dynamic to it as well.
Exactly.
So as a follow-up to both of these, what led you to Jagex and RuneScape?
So the projects that I really enjoyed, like mostly enjoy doing in my free time, besides this underwater horror game I want to make one day, is stylized art. And I like medieval art. I like fantasy art. I'm not good with sci-fi. Like I've tried it out a few times and I don't enjoy making it. So yeah, when I graduated from my university, I applied to RuneScape because it is such an incredibly big game with so much diversity into it. And like, there's not many games out there that if you say, I want to work on a stylized medieval fantasy game that has like more going on in it than RuneScape. Like every few months I work on a completely different area, which is great. But yeah, when I applied straight out of university, I interviewed and I actually did not get the job. So then I, for like a year and a bit, I worked at a different studio but where I also worked on a stylized MMO, which was conveniently down the road from Jagex.
Oh.
And then the studio shut down. So we all lost our job. But I had at this point, obviously I had applied to RuneScape before and I had interviewed. So I had talks with the lead environment artist there before. So I sent him a message and was like, hey, I don't know if you heard, but the studio I worked at shut down. We were down the road from you. And this is my work now, a bit later. Are you by any chance looking for an environment artist? And they were. So that is then how I ended up at RuneScape now.
And the rest is and the rest is history on that, yeah. I guess we could say. And I'll just say that we're so lucky to have you as part of the environment artist team in terms of just being able to put your stamp on what we have so far in game. And with that, what inspires you broadly? You need that dose of inspiration. What gives that to you?
I feel a lot on the RuneScape project. So a lot of the inspiration comes from the people that I work with. The concept team especially will come up with some like incredibly ridiculous ideas, and I love it. It's but like we jokingly sometimes say that if their concepts don't make at least one environment artist cry, then they're not daring enough. But it's we don't mean that in a serious way, obviously.
It's just
like seeing all of the amazing things that they come up with, and then just thinking like how can we put that in game. But other than that, just the stories that the content devs come up with as well, or just like some of the history in the game as well, or just music.
Okay.
Inspires me a lot as well.
RuneScape music or just music in general?
A bit of both.
Okay.
It depends on the project almost.
All right, like, fair enough.
Depending on the project that I work on, if I want it to have like an actual strong certain atmosphere, I will listen to music that will get me in that mood. I think I've mentioned this before in like the Elder God War behind the scenes video, I think it was. I said that when I was making Aya, I was just listening to sad music on repeat because
yes.
I wanted the environment artist to feel that the environment to feel a bit sad.
And I think we got that at the end with how Aya turned out, and I'll say the cherry on top for everybody in Aya was the hot tub dragonkin, of course.
Yes, I'm so happy with him. He was originally in one of the first mood art paintings for it.
Okay,
like the concept artist had just put a little dragonkin in a hot tub. Not Dragonkin, Dragon Rider, sorry. I'm in a hot zone. And when I saw it, I was like, we need this in the game. And then I found out we still had some animation time left for it. So I was like, hey, what are the chances we can get this? And yeah, we got him. And I'm so happy.
And everybody loves him for that. So, all right. So in particular, with RuneScape and some of the content that you've worked on, do you have any particular favorites? And I realize this is a hard thing to ask. Do you have a favorite piece of content that you've worked on?
That is a very difficult question. It's like I've worked on, I feel lucky because I feel like I've worked on so many like really big projects. Like the first thing that I got to work on when I joined was archaeology, which is great. But can I pick three?
Yes. Let's go through okay. Your top three then.
All right. So
let's start from the bottom with number three.
I'm gonna say Glacier Front.
Okay.
For that one, because I'm always gonna be quite attached to this one because this was the first environment that I actually got to take the lead on, pretty
okay.
much make by myself. So up until then, I had mainly been like making materials, making assets, and assisting with building the environments. But Glacier Front was the first one that I got to make. And I'm so proud of how that turned out still. Like we had very early on, we had like the vision of like, oh, we want the Arch Glacier like visible from very far away, and we want it to be really cinematic.
Right.
And I think it worked out, and I'm really happy with that.
What was your favorite thing about that environment?
I think it is indeed just kind of how cinematic it feels, and that it kind of set the mood for the other environments and for the rest of the dungeon, because I had made it that you could see the archbase off from far away.
Right.
And then every boss after that got the same treatment by the other environment artists. They were like, oh, we want them to be visible from far away as well.
And one thing that does that comes to mind with that is around Christmas time last year, all of the Elder God Wars bosses, of course, had the Santa hats on them. And yes. Because they're so large, you can, of course, see the Santa hats from that distance, too. And that was just a chuckle whenever I'd walk into any of the fronts to do Reaper tests around Christmas. Okay.
But my favorite was when Zuck kept his Santa hat for months after Christmas by
yes.
accident. I actually took presentation screenshots of the Zekar front like in a few months after Christmas, and I only noticed several weeks after that on my portfolio, Zuck is still wearing his Santa hat.
Oh, that's hilarious. All right. Number two?
Yeah.
Okay. I feel that's a fair answer given how impactful it was.
Yeah, I really, really, really loved working on that project for just like a variety of reasons. Just like joining Extinction and getting to hear like from the beginning, just like the story plan for it. And then just like getting to make an entire new planet only to immediately destroy it is great.
And
my goal was to make at least one player cry, and I hope I managed to do that.
I haven't heard from anybody in our community if that happened yet with Extinction, but it's definitely very atmospheric from that perspective. And I think with Aya as well, it just culminated such a monumental RuneScape story. When you think about it, people, you know, they'll say that officially Twilight of the Gods and the Zamorak boss fight is the end of that whole big god story, but Extinction is the end of the story with Saren and the eggs. And that was something that everybody had been on week to week. Normally we'd say month to month, but it was really week to week with all the god dialogue and whatnot coming out and all the discussions happening around that through the tail end of the year. So we were all heavily invested in that, of course. And I think you are 100% justified in putting that in your top three, because that quest was very meaningful to a lot of us. And it must, I honestly have no idea what it must feel like to have your stamp on an area like that. If you could describe that, maybe?
Yeah, it's straight. I don't think I fully understand it, really. in a weird way, it's like I've seen it so long and I've worked on it for so long, like it still doesn't feel entirely real that it's out, you know. I always feel like there's a bit of disconnect, like where I'm not entirely understanding that things that I work on actually go live in the game,
right,
you know.
Yeah, okay.
Sorry.
No, I was going to say, you can feel free to continue on about Aya if you want, or we can move on to your most favorite, which, I mean, with Glacier and Aya occupying number three and number two, I'm really curious to see where we go for number one.
Yeah, no, I would actually say a few more things about Aya.
Okay,
as well,
sure.
If that's all right.
Yeah, let's do it.
It's just that there were some technical challenges with it as well. So basically, like, one of the concept artists made some mood art for it, which immediately had, like, the really big trees in it, which technically they are too big for the engine, and they're not possible in our engine. But I told him, like, it'll be fine, I'll figure it out. And then I went on holiday for a week. So he made all of these concepts with, like, the big trees in it. And it did work out. I needed to do some weird shenanigans in which I export them smaller and like actually scale them up an engine.
Okay.
But, I had to go into like the code a little bit to change that. But I kind of just wanted to do something completely different from like actually in Gilanor, like all of the trees that we have there are so tiny. I wish we could just go in and just like swap them all out for actual big chunky ones.
We'll talk about that after. So, that's yes, an interesting exactly. point of discussion too.
So yeah, I it was so nice to be able to work on a planet as well. Like besides all the story bits that come with Aya, just like having the freedom to do that and just be like, I'll figure it out, don't worry. I want this big striking, very recognizable image for it. And I'm really glad we did that.
Yeah, and you are right in that Aya was 100% unique when it came out and still is because it's got that unique stamp on it. So you definitely accomplished that. Number one?
I'm going to say the arena for Zamorak.
Interesting. Okay.
It's the most recent project that I had like an actual big say on it, I guess. But that was just like such a fun project to work on as well, just like the collaboration with Dev. Having the Zamorak model so early on and being able to light the arena in the best way possible to complement the character. And yeah, I quite like making boss arenas in a weird way, because they are these confined spaces that right. the whole goal is just to make them as epic as possible. And yeah, I mean, something really cool about being able to make an arena where you go punch a god.
Yeah, and I guess on the idea of Zamorak then, how do you differentiate the Zamorak boss arena from what players had previously known as the Wilderness Crater with the Sword of Edicts in there? Because that's where that fight does take place. It's obviously an instanced area in the boss fight, and it's got different lighting and different environment aspects to it. So what was your, I guess, train of thought when you said, okay, we're going to be making this boss arena. How do we make it stand out?
It was a whole lot of, this is the Wilderness Crater, and we're going to make it recognizable mainly with the Sword of Edicts.
Okay.
But we are adding a lot of things in it, mainly to make it look as good and as cool as possible. which is nice to have that kind of freedom, almost. Which we kind of contained it with that big dome, right?
Which, yeah.
I mean, it had story reasons, and I'm so glad we did that, because it really transformed that entire environment.
Oh yeah, definitely, definitely. And
yeah, for the arena itself, we were quite restricted. Like the floor had to be flat, mainly because of the mechanics that Zamorak did, which was
okay.
Yeah, it was that. That's why, especially like the terrain in our version of the crater versus the Wilderness Crater is quite different. It was because we were restricted by the actual boss mechanics, and the version in the wilderness isn't. So we kind of just decided to take them as two entirely separate things, visually at least.
Yeah, that's fair. And, you know, maybe this is a bit of an accessibility question, but kind of on the same Zamorak angle. How do you account for in those areas when you have so much red? How do you make sure that everything just doesn't blend together?
Mainly just like lots of playtests, getting lots of feedback. Because I feel like with every environment or with any art that you do, if you just look at it yourself for so long, it's really hard to see the issues with it when it comes to that.
Yeah, and I'd imagine you have a good collaborative process for that.
Yeah, then also colorblind filters.
Okay, good.
Checking that as well, but yeah, lots of feedback, definitely.
All right, and this kind of piggybacks onto where we want to go next with this in terms of RuneScape as a game that's 20 plus years old. There's a huge legacy behind it, both in terms of the story's nostalgia, but also technologically. What kind of challenges does that present to you, either technically or stylistically, when you're talking about something as big and that has such a legacy as RuneScape?
It's definitely a challenge. Like I genuinely believe that making art for RuneScape, or just like making anything in RuneScape, is just like game dev on hard mode, because We were kind of a spoke engine, obviously, with lots of quirks and lots of basic things that you can do in other game engines that we can't do. So we're a lot more limited. So almost every single project, especially in concept phase, we try not to limit ourselves because of our engine. We will just kind of keep pushing and pushing and pushing and see what we can achieve with it.
So you'd say it's basically then kind of ask the question, if there was no limit, the sky is the limit, what could we make this environment look like in the concept phase? And then after that, kind of bring it back to where where the engine allows it.
Yeah, then we're getting hit in the phase with things like, oh, there's a maximum limit for height maps that we have to deal with, which is why the mountains in RuneScape are so small. It's obviously a lot less of an issue in new environments versus, for example, if you were to rework old environments. We're kind of, in that case, we're not just limited by the tech, but also in the way that things have been laid out before. So if, for example, we were to rework the entire overworld, we can't really go in and just change the size of everything. That would break all of the content that is there, which would be pretty much an impossible task. So in that case, we're kind of limited by the decisions that people before us made as well.
And in many cases, then, I guess if you were to, in effect, want to do a wholesale rework like that, you'd basically have to start from scratch. Is that okay?
And pretty much.
And as we know, time is expensive. So
it would take such a long time. Graphical reworks are such an interesting thing because obviously I don't think anyone wants RuneScape to look good more than the actual art team working on it.
Right.
It's such a pain to put like a new pretty area right next to something really old. Like we absolutely hate that inconsistency, but it's kind of, we're more starting to look at it now in a way of what can we realistically actually do? Because for a very long time, we didn't really do anything because there kind of was this thought, and there still is a little bit this thought that I've seen among some players, is why would you rework something if you can't, like, if you don't immediately do it perfectly and on style and swap out everything? It's because it would take years. That is why.
Yeah.
So we're slowly getting more into a mindset of, like, it's an ongoing game. It's an ongoing project. So we should kind of treat graphical reworks in the same way.
So is that the same kind of angle that you took with the Grand Exchange changes for the 300 mil party?
Yes, pretty much. It's kind of a thing that I explored for, like, we called it a game jam, but it kind of was just like several days where you could work on whatever you wanted for RuneScape. So I kind of explored that idea a little bit by swapping out lighting and terrain materials and foliage and seeing what kind of a change that would make, which is what was used as a base for the Grand Exchange project.
Oh, interesting. Okay. That's really interesting that's how that started.
Like, yeah, I mean, Mod Holy confirmed it on live stream, so I'm going to say as well, the entire project is going to release sometime soon.
Nice.
I'm not going to say the actual date yet.
Of course.
We are looking at releasing more things like that.
All right. Now, what about stylistically? Because we've talked about the technical side, but in terms of RuneScape style, you can obviously have things like, the first thing that's coming to my mind is the money tree at the Farming Guild with these shiny metallic golden textures on it. But on the other side, you have Robes of Zamorak from 2004 that are just these flat things that don't have cloth textures. So how big of a concern is that in terms of just trying to make everything fit together with one so-called RuneScape style, I guess you could say?
Yeah, I think for a long time, there was a bit of uncertainty about what the actual style of RuneScape is, right? Because it's gone through so many different looks visually over the years as well, which already makes it quite hard. So it's not just, like, if you look at a game like World of Warcraft, for example, that's also been going for a while, The old areas are obviously worse looking visually than the new ones, but they are clearly still the same style. RuneScape, however, no, like, if you go to different places in the game, it almost looks like an entirely different game.
Yeah, yeah.
Which definitely is an issue. So the first thing that, well, not the first thing, but what we've been doing over the last few years is just settling on the style that we actually like and that we think, like, this is what we want RuneScape to look like. Which I think, especially since archaeology, I guess you could probably say since Necronia, but definitely since archaeology, we've been fairly consistent.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Yeah, so we've kind of now settled on a style that we like and that we want to keep working towards. So then, yeah, it is still the thing of, obviously, we would like to update everything to match that. But that is still so much time that it would take. But at least we've settled on something now, so whenever we make new stuff, it's not just going to be a completely different style than what it was before.
Yeah, and I think we definitely see that with the Wilderness, is that it's a new RuneScape style, but it still feels very familiar, like the Wilderness and of old.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I think that's one of the main things that we want to do as well, is, especially if we talk about reworking stuff, we don't want to drastically change what is there. On when I posted screenshots of the Game Jam project that I did, one of my colleagues actually posted screenshots of the rework of Lumbridge that we worked on for that. And the best compliment that I think we've gotten on that was someone who reacted and said, like, oh, this is what I thought Lumbridge looked like when I was a kid.
Okay.
And that made me so happy, because that meant that we're not completely changing the game from what it was. We want to stay true to what it is, but just make it look visually better.
Right.
So if people still recognize it and can see, like, oh, this is what I remembered it to be like, that's good. Because that means we're going in the right direction.
So does that happen organically then, adapting the styles of the old, or sorry, the adapting the new style into the old areas with the older assets, like you did with the Wilderness and you were just mentioning with Lumbridge? Does that happen organically, or is that something you guys are actively focusing on, that you need to focus on?
I think we're quite actively focusing on it, like, especially with the Wilderness as well. There were lots of discussions that happened about, like, what is the identity of this place, and how can we still, like, convey the same identity in the new reworked version.
Okay. And I think that's good, because if somebody comes back and starts playing again and sees the Wilderness rework, it's that level of familiarity, like what you were talking about with the Lumbridge screenshots and the comments that you got on that. So personally, as a longtime player, that's something that I think is the right path to be on, rather than, in effect, completely turning it upside down and going in with a new style, which I don't think you guys have ever done, but that would just be a major shock to the system if you were to do that. So,
yeah.
And when it comes to the RuneScape style, how much of that style is actually going to be influenced by the team that does the writing for the update? And this is what I would call, and you can tell me if you guys have the same word for it or a different word, is this called environmental storytelling?
Yeah, I'd probably say so. The original briefs and requests basically all come from the people who write for it. They come from design, they come from the content devs. So most of the time they will have an idea in mind of what it is that they want. And then it's actually one of the things that I really like about working on RuneScape, is we have a lot of creative freedom and there's so much collaboration between all of the different disciplines. Like, for the project that I'm working on right now, like, I got involved in the very first brainstorming sessions, like, which is great, because there's so much collaboration on the entire thing and so much say from all sides on this is what we want it to look like. And basically working together on something that everyone's happy with.
All right, so you'd say it's fairly common then that the writing can influence the environment, and
yes,
with that, can the environment also influence the writing, perhaps?
Sometimes, yeah. It depends a little bit on the projects, but like the first one that now just comes to mind for me is this small project that I worked on, which was the what was it called? Skilling update that had the Zygomide hair salon in it.
That was the accidental skilling update.
Yes, that one. Because the way that happened was just every single day I would put things out in the environment. And then I would check again in the morning, and while Sue had just like added a whole bunch of examines to it. and like, no matter what I changed, something would change in either like dialogue or just what is there. And yeah, it just like the more collaboration you have like that between dev and art, it's great. Cause then it feels like everything that we put down has an actual reason to be there as well. And the other way around.
Yeah, and I'd call that the voice of RuneScape, I guess you could say, kind of like just was what it resonates outwards to the players when they play it and experience the update. And this is a question that was kind of influenced one that we asked Mod Shrike about this, about previous quests that were driven by environment and the poking through the environment, like the needle skips and such. But when it comes to RuneScape style and the storytelling that happens from it, what would be, and we'll move on to a little bit more about specific graphical RuneScape questions in a minute, but what would be your ideal RuneScape environment to create if you were wanting to, in effect, just tell some story? If you could create, well, I'll just rephrase that. If you could build your ideal RuneScape environment, what would you like to build? Would it be that underwater horror scene? Or
I don't think that would fit really well in RuneScape. Because one of the things that I really like about RuneScape is the balance between lighthearted and more serious things. Well, I want my horror game to just be horror. So I don't think it would fit. But I feel like that's almost an impossible question to answer for me, because my ideal environment that I want to work on is definitely always influenced by where the story goes.
Okay.
And it would be something like Aya, something that is very visually striking and has an impact on the story in that way. Because that just makes it, like, visually, there's lots of places that I would want to work on, but just like actually having the impacts with it as well, it would depend on where the story goes.
All right, fair enough. And in terms of, speaking of going places, in RuneScape, what's your favorite location in game?
It's a bit of a difficult question. I can't pick any of the ones that I work on, because anytime I go back to it, I keep seeing like the things that are wrong with it. So definitely not one of those. I really like Everlight visually. It's a beautiful place.
Okay.
But another one that is one of my absolute favorites is Darkmire, and I would love to rework that.
Oh.
It has such potential to look absolutely stunning. And I love the overall aesthetic of it.
Have you played through the quest that requires you to go through the maze in the city there?
Yes. I hate that maze. And that is definitely one of the reasons why I would want to rework it, because I had to turn off textures to get around there, because I couldn't see what was floor and what was wall. So I'll definitely, when I have some time, I really want to have a look at that. But
all right.
Overall,
so answer Everlight.
Like Everlight, but definitely also Darkmire. Not visually like the prettiest one in there, but I think it could be, which is what makes it so interesting to me.
All right. And RuneScape has had a variety of art styles over its life, and this is something that you mentioned that you guys settled on around Anachronia time, maybe archaeology time. It's more consistent now with recent updates. And how would you describe the graphical identity of RuneScape in your own words?
Yeah, it's overall stylized, but with some, like, to go into technical terms, with PBR in it, so like with actual physically accurate values for metals and things like that. But in general, just what we're going for now is more a grounded medieval fantasy style. So still fantasy, because obviously there's magic and so much like fantastical things in the world, but everything that we make, we want it to look like it could be grounded in reality.
All right. And this is maybe a bit of a difficult question, but how do you balance that if some team out there was to want something over the top? Would the environment team work to find a comfortable medium for that fits within the style?
We definitely do go for over the top as well.
Okay.
Some very specific things I'm thinking of now, but I'm not going to mention them.
All right, fair enough.
But it's... things can be completely over the top and very unrealistic, but just the way that it's put together almost can still be realistic.
Yeah, so, yeah, I think I see that.
Yeah, for example, just thinking of something like... if you would have just something like, I don't know, a floating building or anything like that, or an underwater city, like both of these are not immediately the most realistic things, but then you can look at the way that the actual buildings, for example, are put together. And that can look grounded and realistic. But the overall concept can be completely out there.
And you can find a way to make it work at the end of the yeah. day. And in terms of floating buildings, the first thing I thought of, and it's not necessarily
Thorngard, actually. Yeah.
Okay. That's an interesting option now that you mention it, because of course that's floating up in the sky. Okay, that yeah. works. I was also thinking of the Baba Yaga's house that walks yes. around. So, and I guess that's over the top, but also at the same time, it still says what needs to be said about the various environments that it's trying to tell the story of.
And that one specifically, like Baba Yaga's house, is grounded in like actual folklore, which immediately makes it a little bit more grounded, I feel, than something like Stormguard that is just literally a floating city.
All right. And I wanted to ask this question, and the producers of this show had to ask this question. Why can't all the trees be updated in RuneScape? And I know that's been a topic of discussion before, but why can't all the trees just be copy-pasted?
So, the trees that were made for Dave and Dell, I've made those specifically that their sizes are perfectly fit to replace the basic trees that we have in-game. So, technically, we have the models that we could swap out the actual basic trees and make them cuttable and it would work with everything. However, if I would do that, your PC would probably like catch fire. So one of the restrictions that we have, which with RuneScape that a lot of other games don't have, is that we don't have an actual level of detail system. So any asset that you see in game is either there or it's not.
Oh.
Almost actual Most games nowadays, pretty much all of them, have different versions of models that are lower resolution, lower poly count, and all of that the further you get. But we don't have that working. So if we swap out the trees with like actual more detailed ones, then all of the ones that you will see will be the more detailed ones. And I can guarantee you that is most likely going to crash your game. So at the moment, we're choosing to keep the game playable over swapping these out. It is something that we are looking at, definitely, but at the moment, technically, we just can't. Which is a shame, because we really want to. But hopefully, someday soon, we will be able to do it.
So that's another one of those legacy issues, then, that comes around, because the game engine just has these quirks from 20 years of work that makes it so that you can't do that then.
Yeah, exactly. And trees especially, just like anything with foliage and all of that on it, is incredibly heavy, like no matter what engine you're in. Like even Unreal Engine 5, which is, anyone who knows anything about game dev knows that engine is pretty much saying like, oh yeah, you can put in whatever you want, like the highest quality, like detail meshes you can put it in. The one way you break that engine is with plants.
Okay.
Because plants are really heavy. So yeah, trees especially are just, we can't at the moment. Tree is a shame.
And
because we have the models, but we technically can't.
So the level of detail system then, if you had it, would work so that basically the further you are out, it loads a lower resolution version of that model so that the player's computers are able to handle it then.
Yes, exactly.
All right.
So it's a little bit of an annoying one because we obviously want more detail and more of everything in our environments, but we're broken a very... very like thin line of making detailed environments and making it so players can still like actually play the game, which is it's a challenge, definitely.
And I guess a question that's a bit of a follow up from this in terms of the actual level of detail, how many polygons, if you know, are we talking about for one of the existing trees in RuneScape versus one of the Davendale trees?
Not entirely sure how
okay.
how many polygons the existing ones have. But I would probably say, like, just off the top of my head, I'd probably say, like, a few hundred, while the Davendale ones are in a few thousand each.
Okay. And then and then there's where you start to see that scaling issue come in then.
Yeah, and especially if you look at the overworld in Gilanor, there are lots of trees there. Like, a lot of them. So if we were just like do an actual swap, that would be such a big issue. Because we can't just really go in and mindlessly start ripping out trees either, because like some of these are used to indicate like where clue scrolls are, some of these are tied to content, and that's not something we can always see in our engine. So
okay.
that we need to go past like a lot of QA time as well, and possibly dev to make sure that they fix anything that we accidentally might have broken.
Right, you don't want to break that one tree in McGrubber's Wood that starts URN.
Exactly. But those are things that might happen, because content, this is also an interesting one, like when talking about graphical reworks actually, is that some content in RuneScape is straight up not tied to an object, but to actual coordinates. So if we, for example, would move things around, then suddenly the object that you need to stand on these coordinates is no longer there, so you suddenly also broken like some kind of quest.
Oh wow.
Which really makes it challenging to graphically rework anything, because we have to be so careful about what we move or remove of or swap out. Because
see, that's
That's
so interesting, because thinking about it, I thought that if you were to do a graphical rework of a specific area, you would effectively just use the same coordinates and places where you put everything down, and just the quality of the model and the textures would change. But we're talking about a complete rebuild in some cases then, right?
Yeah, I mean, the most realistic version of what we actually are ever going to be able to do is indeed what you said, swapping out models, swapping out textures. But yeah, ideally, because we want the world to be a grounded medieval style, if you then look at old buildings like in Varrock or Lumbridge, like the walls are paper thin. So like the castles are tiny. So we can't swap those out for actual big ones,
because
you can't change the footprint. Which immediately takes it that we can't really update those areas to the level that we make new environments.
Yeah.
Purely because of the size of it.
Yeah, and when it comes to size, you know, one of the things that I've heard the community talk about is that when it comes to graphical reworks, why not rework a city and then from that point of view, make that city feel like a bigger city and add distance between its neighboring city? But then I guess we're in that same kind of problem then, aren't we?
Yeah, exactly. We can't really artificially go add in more land, because there just isn't. No, that's the way our engine works. There's no way for us to really add anything in between areas.
And
but we would have to actually move stuff outwards, which immediately then breaks the coordinates.
I guess
it's not ideal.
And I guess when that comes down to it, at the end of the day, the graphical updates that we get are largely due to style and just in effect bringing those areas up to the modern graphical standard.
Yeah.
And in terms of all the ones we've seen so far, they look really good. And I personally have loved all the recent graphical reworks. They've been pretty darn good. So I think you guys are on the right path with that. And I didn't necessarily intend for the tree question to go down that path, but here we are, folks.
I was so happy when I saw you going past that. I was like, yes, finally I can explain it, because I've obviously gotten that question before and there's an actual reason for it. So I'm glad I got to explain it.
All right. Is there anything else you'd like to talk about in particular with the graphics of RuneScape, trees, its art style, anything on that matter?
We covered most of it.
Alrighty. I want to talk a bit about how you play RuneScape. So let's just say you want to sit down and relax with some RuneScape. What does your ideal session look like right now?
So it's a bit of a weird one, because I wasn't really a big RuneScape player before I joined Jagex. So RuneScape is the very first game I ever remember playing, but that was when I was very young, probably too young to actually play the game. But then I stopped for ages and I picked it up again when I actually started working at Jagex. So I am not max. My account is still quite, yeah. I'm playing whenever I feel like it, which is not too often, because again, I look at it every day already.
Sure, sure.
So at the moment, what I'm doing is just going through all the quests. So my ideal session is kind of just, yeah, sit down and find and play through quests that make me feel like this is a new game to me and make me forget that I actually work on it.
All right, yeah. And I mean, you can put yourself into those quests, and you can definitely get that feeling from any of them, just in terms of whether you
definitely.
From super serious to super humorous, or who knows what you're going to get when you pull those up. So do enjoy those quests. I say, for me personally, that questing is one of my favorite things in games. So while you got that quest, let's go for it and enjoy it. on that, what's your favorite quest, since we were just talking about quests?
So I have a very biased answer to this, and then I have a not-so-biased answer.
All right.
The very biased one is Extinction.
Okay.
It's seeing that entire quest come together, like knowing everything that went into it. Just like reading through the first stories, like that was absolutely incredible to me. It like, for me, it actually felt like it was such a big moment, and yeah, I absolutely love the quest and the story for it.
All right.
My less biased answer, because it's one that I didn't work on, is the needle skips.
Ooh.
I really like that one.
Yep.
Just like the changes to the environment that happened, and just it felt quite different. It felt so personal for the characters that you, because you literally go into their memories, or you can see their memories.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, it's not a linear quest, because
no.
The path I took versus the path you take versus somebody who wants to do the quest in 5-10 minutes reading a guide is completely different with that. And that's one of the things that always stood out to needle skips for me. So I was not expecting to hear needle skips on this, but that's a definite 2 thumbs up from me. What about your favorite skill? Do you have a favorite skill currently?
Archaeology.
Everybody,
I feel like it's a very basic answer, but it just feels like such a well-rounded skill to me. Like I can AFK it if I want it, but it can feel so immersive with like all of the new places that you go to, like the mysteries that you solve. It's just it kind of works for whatever mood I'm in, and I like that.
Yeah, and you know, the archaeology, I think, definitely set a benchmark when it came out in terms of being "quote unquote" the new skill, but it also set benchmarks into what skill design should be in terms of how skills should guide the player through them, what it does for the environment. Like you mentioned, Everlight's one of your favorite environments, and I don't think people were expecting to get as much lore out of a skill as we did with archaeology. So I think if you ask somebody what their favorite RS skill is, archaeology is always has a chance of coming up top, and I don't think that's a wrong answer.
No, it's especially because even though it's a very recent skill, it feels like such an integral part of the world now.
Yeah,
which I love.
Yeah, just in terms of the lore and the questions it opened and what we were able to kind of unearth with it, to use the exact words with it. So, what about current RuneScape goals? Do you have any goals presently?
A bit of a silly one, but I am not strong enough for this, but I want to kill Zamrek at 2000 in rage so I can get those pretty witch robes.
Okay.
Because they are aesthetically really good. I voice the character in the game that's wearing them, and yet there is no way for me to unlock them as a dev besides actually playing the game and killing Zamrek.
And I guess that's a long-term goal you could go for, because
it is.
I mean, the path I've heard people take before for PVM, and this is a path you could take, I'm not saying you need to go this way. Say you continue doing quests, you say you like doing quests, that leads to Master Quest Cape, because Master Quest Cape has a bunch of PVM requirements behind it. Then that would be an interesting way to learn PVM, and obviously that's throwing yourself into the deep end, but it's a long road to get to the 2000% enrage Zamorak kill. But it's something that always comes up with RS, is that people can set this goal and then find 15 other little goals along the way. And we've talked about before how that makes RuneScape what it is, and that's how I play the game, and from the sounds of it, that's how you play the game as well. And it all starts with a cosmetic, and who knows where we wind up along the way after that, right?
So. Exactly. It'll be great. It'll be a lot of fun to get there. So.
And I guess the last question before we go, what's your favorite thing about RuneScape? It can be the game, the community, Jagex, it can be anything.
I think probably the community. It feels quite unique to RuneScape in how direct the interactions are between devs and players, if we wanted to. Like, it's completely optional for us to actually be out there and be open with players, but like, we get to directly interact with players, so I get to immediately see reactions and feedback. And in general, the community is really, really nice and supportive.
Yeah.
Which, yeah, it's honestly just really great.
Have you ever been to a RuneFest?
I haven't. So the last RuneFest that happened was the first week that I started work at Jagex. And I had the option to go, and I said no, because it was my first week, and I didn't know anyone, and I was still quite new to RuneScape at this point. And I thought, I'll go next year. And here we are.
Yeah, and we all know what happened with that.
Exactly.
Well,
but I'm hoping to go.
Well, here's fingers crossed that they'll be able to come back sometime soon.
Exactly.
With that. And the community is a wonderful thing about RuneScape. That's why we do these Behind the Crown episode. So I just want to say thank you, Maud Blackwitch, for spending the hour or so with us. It's meant a lot to me, and I hope that we were able to allow you to tell your story about how you got to RuneScape and what the game means to you as a JMod. So is there anything else you'd like to say before you depart?
Not really. Just thank you for having me. It was really nice to be able to talk about all of these little things that go into being an environmental artist for RuneScape.
And we thank Maud Blackwitch for spending the afternoon with us there. That was a wonderful chance to sit down. And once again, just so much passion and so much joy that all the JMods get for working on RuneScape. So we sincerely thank her for the time that she spent with us. And if you guys have any ideas about who you would like to see on Behind the Crown, just drop that in the comments for this episode, or let us know in Discord or PM one of us in game. So if you have any ideas about who you'd like to see on for the next Behind the Crown special. But with that, we can start wrapping things up, I guess. We got a bit of a calm before, or wrapping up the double XP storm for achievements. But before that, I have a pick of the week this week. And this is something I'm still evaluating this. I'm not 100% sure if this is going to be a mainstay, but it's an interesting pick of the week nonetheless, and I think people can get some use out of this. So it's a bookmark manager, and I always wonder about people, you know, why do you use bookmarks in your browser when you could manage your bookmarks in a different way in a third-party tool? And for ages back in the day, I used Delicious, and then I used Pinboard, and Pinboard started having some issues with its archiving feature and whatnot. Then I was looking for an alternative, and I found this other service that's a pick of the week this week called Raindrop. You can find it at raindrop.io, and what it is it's a bookmark archiver, and what happens is that any website you want to save or you want to remember, you can just pop it into Raindrop, and then you can categorize it into folders, you can categorize them into tags. And this is actually really useful for podcast management, and this is my main use case for it, is that whenever there's a URL that comes up that's outside of the official RuneScape webpage that we need, or a news article about it, I'll pop it into Raindrop, and the idea behind it is that it just serves as an extra repository in addition to our producer's spreadsheet, because where Raindrop gets really powerful is that if you pay... let's see, how much is it monthly? If you pay $4 a month for this, $4 Canadian a month, so it's probably like $3 American a month. If you pay $3 a month, you get a full text search. You can search your entire collection. So you save that news article from last year and you're searching for something and it pops up. It will find it in the full text search of all your articles you've saved. It's also got a permanent library feature. So that if the website disappears or the page is changed or taken down, Raindrop will still have a copy on it. And there is no limit on the amount of pages you can save or how much space they take up with that. You can also add annotations to your pages that you save. You can also upload... it also serves as a personal file store. You can upload 10 gigs of files per month, like images, videos, PDFs, documents, whatever you want to use to store there, you can store it in Raindrop. And this is all for $3 a month. There's some other features here for this as well. But the main thing that's interesting about it is that it's primarily a bookmark manager. And I wanted something that had full text search and was able to archive pages that disappeared. So for me, it was a no-brainer. I started with the free sample that you get a free sample if you sign up for the first month, and then after that you can decide if you want to keep it, I believe. And then following from that, you can just buy it on a yearly basis. And you know, for what we do here in terms of podcasting, $38 a year just to archive pages is not going to be a big problem to ensure that we're able to keep actual physical copies of any page that we come across, and we just want to make sure that it stays in that format and doesn't get changed or doesn't disappear or allows us to search with that and whatnot. So
sounds like a great tool if you were in school. Like, I wish this was around, because with all the research that I did.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Really nice.
They also have it so that you can share collections and whatnot with other people as well.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. And you can even have a public page so you could, you know, archive, hey, these are the pages I've come across over the last week. You can find it online there and whatnot. So raindrop.io. And if you just need something that just keeps bookmarks and you don't need the archiving and you don't need the full text search, that's 100% free.
Can't beat that.
No. So, and it's all cloud-based too. So it's going to work. But that's the pick of the week. All right, let's start with some achievements then.
All right. Well, starting off the achievements, we have Barazzi with 99 Fletching on the 23rd. We have Daydreamer with 99 Invention on the 23rd. And 99 Archaeology. Nice. Okay. Then we have Lord Dusty with 120 Runecrafting on the 23rd. Mayfan with 120 Archaeology on the 23rd. We have River Design with 99 Woodcutting. That was also on the 23rd. Then moving to the 22nd, we have the 82nd Airborne with 120 Agility. Woo! Nice. Yeah, that's on the 22nd. Jay Gizmo with 120 Mining on the 22nd. Mayfan again with 120 Farming. There you go, Shane. Skips with 99 Woodcutting on the 22nd. Arov with 120 Constitution on the 22nd. And who's this? Do I know this one? Shane 12088 with 120 Woodcutting on the 21st. Way to go, Shane. Hey. And then we have Cyroasis with 120 Construction on the 21st. And Sparty Pants with 200 mil Constitution on the 21st.
Nicely done, folks. Then we have Vivian with 99 Cooking on the 21st, as well as 99 Runecrafting and 99 Woodcutting. Exploited One with 99 Runecrafting. Then on the 20th, we have Dead Engineer with 200 mil Cooking. Vantic with 120 Farming, and Zookeeper 53 with 99 Hunter. Then on the 19th, we have Mahin with 99 Crafting, Vivian with 99 Thieving, Divination, and Hunter, all on the 19th. Then on the 18th, we have SillyCat 98 with 120 Invention, and then Skips got 99 Summoning. Then to round out our double XP achievements, we have Underking with 120 Woodcutting and 120 Crafting on the 18th. Nicely done, everyone.
Very nice. Way to go, Shane.
Thank you. Thank you. I guess that means I'm up first in what have we been doing, right?
I think so.
Okay. So obviously from this, folks, you can see I got 120 woodcutting. That's been a long goal. Initially what I had intended to do was to get all my 99s back in order of the 120s the way I initially got the 99s. And, you know, I don't know. I still feel very torn about this. I still feel very torn about getting 120s that don't have real 120s in them. And that's just something I haven't been able to get over yet, because I feel like, you know, should Jagex ever expand X skill to 120, how am I going to feel about that, right? I mean, I guess the answer is to do it on the fresh start alt after that, right?
There you go. Yeah.
But I don't. Put simply, I don't know what's gonna be happening next. I might have opened up the master quest list a couple times this week and popped off a couple of little quick ones on there. I might have done that.
Mm-hmm.
But no guarantees that that's the way I'm gonna go. But
there was no guarantees that's how your comp was going to go either.
Yeah, comp was a little bit different, though. Comp was a little bit different. It was down to like 25 when I first looked. But
we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. But before recording today, I completed my full set of Octo Raids armor. I got the last piece that I need, so I have all 15 pieces of the tier 90 tank armor now.
There you go.
The non-degradable variant that can be augmented and add a whole lot of extra HP to me that I don't know where I'll need it except if I decide to start tanking various bosses. So that's fun.
There you go.
And that means as well with that I'm only the little Tuzzy pet away from completing the Mascab Raids drop log.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. From what I understand, the little Tuzzy one is going to be the adventure to get going forward at this point, but I mean, it's definitely a reason to keep doing raids. Last I looked, Mazcab Codexes, which I believe are a 1 in 7 with rerolls, which is pretty good, are 53 mil. And then going forward, it'll be set up in such a way, you can set it up so that you'll keep getting the last piece of armor again, which means that every time I get a piece of Octo going forward in the future, that'll be a 12 mil GP drop that just converts into GP when killed in the wilderness with it. So,
okay.
Lots of That's interesting cool. opportunities for that going forward. So, I'm looking forward to keeping on raiding. I think I'm at something like 88 Yakka kills at this point. I crossed 100 Beastmaster kills yesterday. So closing in on that 100, that's going to be a good milestone, but that's what I've been up to on RS.
Nice. Nice. Well, I have been doing pretty much what I'm always doing, but the difference is, I think when I started this Odyssey, I think I had somewhere around 46, 47K Elder Rune bars. We have finally whittled that down to 3K. It's taken a long time. But in that time, I have been able to buy full Crypt Bloom and my Nox Staff, which actually just jumped up like freaking 40 mil since I tried to buy it last week. Yeah, it went from like 220 to 269.
What?
Yeah, in a week. But I didn't have enough money. So
why?
I couldn't do anything about it last week. I don't know.
Why?
Yeah. So, and I'm about 80 mil smithing. So, you know, it's been fun. I'm probably going to finish out what bars I have, just so I can stock up, buy some runes. Cause I'm going to be, you know, obviously doing a lot of magic with my Crypt Bloom, a lot of animate dead, and, I'll be doing David's legacy approach with the blood barrage and all of that, and
or just use burst because that's an expensive spell, honestly.
Yeah, I guess I can do that too. So, yeah, I'm just, you know, I may even buy another Grace of the Elves just for when I go back to mining at some point, so I can have a second one. It's easier to just switch those out, you know, keep on going.
Oh, with different teleports on them or how or why?
No, you can, so that I have a 1,000 porters before I'd have to go
back. Oh, okay. Fair enough.
Yeah. But that's been about it, but not too bad, right? I mean, it ain't much, but it was honest work.
Yeah, and we knew you were headed that way. That's going to be interesting to see what you do with the Fresh Start Worlds economy. Thinking about that.
Yeah, so, exactly.
Yeah. Alrighty. Well, I think that pretty much wraps this episode of RSBNB Update up. Hopefully you guys have enjoyed this, because it was fun to come back and touch Fresh Start Worlds again, and we are so eagerly waiting to do that. 4 weeks to go. 4 weeks to go. So. Unfortunately, it's not on the 12th, but hey, we'll deal with that. We'll be back next week. I don't know what next week is going to look like. I didn't know what this week was going to look like, except for Behind the Crown. So, so thankful again for Mod Blackwitch for spending the time with us to record that. I always love doing these Behind the Crown specials. So, big thank you goes out to her. But if you enjoyed this episode or you want the episodes delivered automatically to you, subscribe. Subscribe on your favorite podcast listener. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon, Pocket Casts, and Stitcher, just to name a few. We're also on YouTube at youtube.com/RSBNB. That's where you post the nibbles and the video versions of the show. And the micro lessons are also there. Last week's on runecrafting, money making, all the previous wonderful combat ones too. YouTube.com/RSBNB. And if you like the show or you just like what's there, do like and subscribe. It greatly helps the channel out. But with that being said, we'll be back next week for another episode of RSBNB Update. Take care, everyone. See you then.
See ya.